a new government that will represent us fairly and justly and accomplish all that we want to achieve. The first step in creating this new order is the naming of names. We have the opportunity, the responsibility, of choosing the names by which our community will be known. It may seem like a trivial task, but it is not. It is of primary importance. Yet, what do we see all around us? Instead of unity, there is strife. Instead of clear purpose, there is confusion and struggle. We are divided and weak, where we must be united and strong.
Holly listened in growing fascination, feeling herself drawn into his web of words. It's enthralling, she realized. Malcolm is mesmerizing all these thousands of people.
We are the chosen ones, he was telling them. We few, we chosen few who will establish human purpose and human dignity at the farthest outpost of civilization. We who will bring the banner of humanity to the cold and hostile forces of nature. We who will show all the universe that we can build a strong and safe haven for ourselves, a paradise of our own creation. The naming of names is merely the first step in this quest. We then must create a new government and elect the leaders who will serve us as we begin to create the new society that we desire. Instead of rivalry, we must have cooperation. Instead of struggle, we must have unity. Instead of weakness, we must have strength. Let each man and woman here firmly resolve that this society shall be strong and united. Ask not what gain you as an individual will obtain. Ask rather what strength you can contribute to help create a free and flourishing new order. We can build a paradise with our own hands. Will you help to do it? They bellowed, yes! They clapped and cheered and whistled. Eberly stood at the podium, head bowed, soaking up their adulation the way a flower drinks in sunlight. The crowd quieted, watching his silent form up on the podium. Slowly, Eberly raised his head, looked out on them with an almost beatific smile on his lips. Each of you, each man and woman here, must pledge yourselves to the unity and cooperation we need to create the new order. I want each of you to reach out and clasp hands with the person next to you. Friend or stranger, man or woman, take your neighbor's hand in your own and swear that we will work together to build our new world.
The crowd murmured, heads turned, feet shuffled. Then, slowly at first, people turned to each other and clasped hands. Holly watched as more and more people embraced, their differences forgotten for the moment, many of them openly sobbing. Holly realized that Malcolm was the only person in the entire habitat who could bring the people together like this. She was proud to have helped this great man achieve this moment of unity, this powerful emotion of loving friendship.
Urgent communication. 2. Dr. Professor E. Urbane, Habitat Goddard. From H.H. Haddix, Chair, IAA Executive Board. Subject, Titan Contamination Risk. In response to your request, the Executive Board initiated a thorough assessment of policy in regard to human exploration of the Saturnian moon, Titan. After review by the Astrobiology and Planetary Protection Committees of the International Astronautical Authority, it has been unanimously decided that any human excursion upon the surface of Titan is strictly forbidden. Protection of the indigenous life forms of Titan takes precedence over all other goals, including scientific investigation. Robotic exploration of Titan's surface is permitted, providing existing planetary protection decontamination procedures are strictly adhered to. H. Harvey Haddix, Chair, IAA Executive Board. Reverend Calypso J.C. Abernathy, Imprimatur.
Saturn arrival, minus 288 days. Ruth Morgenthau hated these nature walks that Eberle insisted upon. He's absolutely paranoid, she thought, as she trudged reluctantly along the path that led through the park from Village A toward the orchards. He worries that someone might be bugging his apartment the way we're bugging everyone else's. It's no longer Village A, she reminded herself. It's Athens now, and the orchard is officially the St. Francis of Assisi Preserve. Morgenthau almost giggled aloud. What a name. What arguments they had had. Real shouting battles between herself, Vyborg, and Kananga. Even the normally moderate and reserved Janssen had raised his voice when it came to naming the habitat's various laboratory buildings. The months-long campaign to produce actual names for the habitat's villages, buildings, and natural features had been little more than a farce. Every vote had a scatter factor, larger almost than the number of votes. Everyone in the habitat had an opinion about what the names should be, and hardly two votes agreed with each other. It was a grand mess, but Eberle came through with a magnificent solution. Since there is no unanimity among the voters, he told his inner cadre of confidants, we will have to make the decisions ourselves. That set the four of them wrangling, with Kananga insisting that African names be just as numerous as European or Asian, Vyborg holding out for names that had powerful psychological connotations among the populace, and Janssen firmly, sometimes stubbornly, proffering his own list of famous scientists' names. Eberle had stayed above the fray, listening to their squabbles with cold disdain. Morgenthau found the whole affair disgusting. She hadn't cared what names were chosen, as long as they were not blatantly secular. She had flatly refused to allow the biology facility to be named after Charles Darwin, of course. In the end, Eberle resolved most of their disputes. When they could not agree, he made the decision. When they wrangled too long, he stepped in and told them to stop acting like children. Morgenthau watched over him carefully, though, and he knew it. Village A got a European name, Athens. Village B went to the Asians, Bangkok. Village C became Cairo. The Americans, North and South, complained bitterly, but Eberle stared them down by solemnly proclaiming that those were the names that the habitat's residents had voted for. After all, he pointed out, Americans actually were a minority in the habitat's population. Since the votes were secret ballots, Eberle refused to allow anyone to recount them. In a great show of seeming impartiality, he erased all the votes, so that no one can tamper with them or use them to cause unrest in the future, he announced. There were some grumbles, but the people, by and large, accepted the names that the voters allegedly chose. Eberle saw to it that there were plenty of American and Latino names sprinkled among the buildings and natural features to keep everyone reasonably satisfied. It was a strong, masterful performance, Morgenthau felt. Yet a tendril of worry troubled her. Perhaps Eberle was too strong, too determined to have his own way, too hungry for power. We are agents of God, she reminded herself. We seek power, not for ourselves, but for the salvation of those 10,000 lost souls. She wondered if Eberle felt the same way. In fact, she was almost certain he did not. Yet authorities higher than her own had chosen Eberle to lead the mission. Her job was to support him and keep him from straying too far from the path the new morality and holy disciples had chosen for him. So Morgenthau walked beside him along the Washington Carver pathway, which led from Athens to the St. Francis Orchard and beyond, over the little rolling knolls that bore the incongruous name of the Andes Hills, toward the farmlands of the Ohio region. She desperately hoped that Eberle would not decide to walk all the way to California, the open region up by the end camp. Her feet hurt enough already. You're very quiet this afternoon, Eberly said as they walked along the meandering brick path. Those were the first words he had.